Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording from our studio here in East County. Today, we bring you some very important stories across the state and nation, as well as top local stories here in San Diego's East County. We open our show with an update on those wildfires in Northern California that are now the deadliest in our state's history, and which have resulted in disaster declarations in numerous California counties. These fires serve as frightening reminders of just how swiftly a wildfire can spread and devastate lives. So please, listeners, use extra caution to avoid any activities that may spark a fire, with so many of our firefighters dispatched to Northern California helping to fight those terrible fires. In other top news, hear how ICE is threatening to crack down on immigrant communities after Governor Jerry Brown signed a sanctuary state bill meant to protect most undocumented immigrants in California from federal deportation efforts. On our Capitol Report, we'll have details on President Donald Trump's proposed tax plan. Find out who benefits and who doesn't on today's show. Trump has also issued a sweeping executive order to undo mandates of Obamacare. Hear how that could impact your health and the stability of the health insurance market. On our Crime Beat report, we'll have news about a bizarre crime involving a sword, an arsonist, and a SWAT team in Rural Boulevard here in East County. El Cajon's City Council will be holding a revote on tax liens involving unpaid trash collection accounts due to a conflict of interest by a councilman who failed to recuse himself despite operating an organization that took over $2,500 from the city's trash hauling company. A lawsuit has been filed on behalf of victims of the Las Vegas mass shooting against the manufacturer of a bump stock device used to convert a semi-automatic weapon into the equivalent of a machine gun. Here in San Diego, carfentanil, that's an elephant tranquilizer so potent that an amount the size of 2 grains of salt can kill a grown man, is turning up in counterfeit painkiller medications on the streets of San Diego with deadly results. It's also being laced in heroin, and we'll have details on this terrifying new drug that is 5,000 times stronger than heroin. On Destination East County, we'll have all the thrilling and chilling Halloween haunts coming up across our inland region, as well as some other special activities, including Kids Care Fest, the Borrego Days Desert Festival, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, and A Taste of East County. On People Power, hear about a major donation to help the Challenge Center, an amazing facility in La Mesa that is helping to rehabilitate patients with brain and spinal cord injuries. Then, from Public News Service, learn about graduation rate concerns for Latinos in California colleges. Out in Lakeside, hear about a dramatic dog rescue of one very lucky golden retriever. The county's 2017 crop report is out, and you may be surprised to learn what the top-growing agricultural products are now in the San Diego region. Plus, hear about concerns raised over the increasingly large share of the U.S. Forest Service's budget being consumed by firefighting. And learn how you can apply to fill openings on the Grossmont High School District's Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. We'll have all of these stories for you today, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Nearly 24 firestorms raging across Northern California have now collectively surpassed in deadliness the 2003 Cedar Fire, which killed 16 people in San Diego County. At least 31 people are now confirmed dead across Northern California, and the toll will likely climb higher, with hundreds of people still missing and dozens of official searchers combing the rubble of burned homes and businesses with dog teams searching for bodies. The current fires have destroyed over 3,500 homes, CAL FIRE confirms, a sum that surpasses both the Cedar Fire and the 2007 firestorms down here. Thus far, the fires have torched over 191,000 acres, a devastating toll, although that's still less than San Diego County suffered alone in the Cedar Fire that charred over 273,000 acres, or the even larger fires in 2007 that burned over 300,000 acres in our county. Those 2007 firestorms in San Diego still hold the chilling record of the most evacuations at over 500,000 people. Governor Jerry Brown this week issued emergency declarations for Butte, Lake, Mendocino, Napa, Nevada, Orange, Solano, Sonoma, and Yuba counties. The federal government has approved the governor's request for a presidential major disaster declaration to support local firefighting efforts in California, and yet still, many of the fires are raging largely out of control, fueled by California's infamous devil winds. The Napa Valley town of Calistoga is among the latest to receive evacuation orders for the entire town. Numerous wineries and vineyards in Napa Valley and Sonoma County have been destroyed or damaged. Among those destroyed are Signorello Estates and Paradise Ridge Wineries, as well as the Hilton Sonoma Wine Country Hotel. In Sonoma County alone, over 900 missing person reports were filed, and about half of those remain missing, though many may be safe and simply unable to communicate due to downed communications. One of the worst-hit areas was the city of Santa Rosa, where even seasoned firefighters voiced shock at numerous urban and suburban blocks totally leveled by the flames. Even big-box stores, such as a Kmart, burned to the ground. At the Journey's End Mobile Home Park in Santa Rosa, at least 100 manufactured homes burned, trapping some elderly residents inside who could not escape. The increased death toll includes 8 from Mendocino County, where high winds have fire officials deeply concerned, the Sacramento Bee reports. Safari West, a wildlife preserve, suffered damage, but the owner left his own home to burn in order to successfully save all of the exotic animals. The fires have caused unhealthy air not only in the areas that burned, but as far away as 100 miles. Air quality in San Francisco is worse than Beijing, China, due to the thick smoke, the San Francisco Chronicle reports. Air quality is also poor in Anaheim, where a pall of orange smoke hangs over Disneyland, though firefighters are making good progress toward containing the Canyon 2 complex fire there. Causes of the multiple fires remain under investigation, though PG&E power lines may be responsible for some of the blazes, multiple media outlets report. Scientists warn that unless steps are taken to combat climate change, more frequent and severe wildfires can be expected for the foreseeable future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law Senate Bill 54, the sanctuary state measure aimed at protecting undocumented immigrants in California. In his signing statement, Brown says, "These are uncertain times for undocumented Californians and their families, and this bill strikes a balance that will protect public safety while bringing a measure of comfort to those families who are now living in fear every day." But the action has drawn a statement in response from Tom Homan, acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, threatening to conduct at-large arrests in local neighborhoods and work sites, which will inevitably result in additional collateral arrests, instead of focusing on arrests at jails and prisons, adding that ICE will now have to detain people outside of California, making families travel farther. The bill prohibits local governments from requiring undocumented immigrants to spend extra time in jail so that immigration agents can pick them up and deport them. It also bans police or other law enforcement officers from asking about immigration status of people during routine interactions, such as speaking with victims of crime or witnesses, or during traffic stops. The governor notes, "It also bans unconstitutional detainer requests that prohibits the commandeering of local officials to do the work of immigration agents. It instructs the state's attorney general to create model policies for health, education, labor, and judiciary officials at state and local levels to follow on immigration matters." Brown adds, "It is important to note what the bill does not do. The bill does not prevent or prohibit Immigration and Customs Enforcement of the Department of Homeland Security security from doing their work in any way. They are free to use their own considerable resources to enforce federal immigration law in California. Moreover, the bill does not prohibit sheriffs from granting immigration authorities access to California jails to conduct routine interviews, nor does it prevent cooperation in deportation proceedings for anyone in state prison or for those in local jails for any of the hundreds of serious offenses listed in the Trust Act. But ICE's Homan insists that Brown's decision to sign SB 54 will undermine public safety and hinder ICE from performing its federally mandated mission. Contrary to earlier promises, some recent ICE arrests and detentions focused not on criminals, but those whose only transgression was entering the U.S. without documentation decades ago in some cases. Such arrests have split apart families, separating parents from young children born in the U.S., deporting even parents of disabled and hospitalized children. An FBI report on crime proves that border cities with high immigrant populations actually have lower crime rates than non-border cities. However, as Times of San Diego recently reported, fear of deportation can lead to some immigrants not coming forward if they witness crimes or are victims of crimes. The Sanctuary State bill was supported by immigrant and human rights groups, but opposed by the California Sheriff's Association. The California Police Chiefs Association, however, shifted its stance to neutral after amendments were added to alleviate the group's initial concerns. California is home to 2.3 million undocumented immigrants, more than any other state. A new Los Angeles Times poll released this month shows nearly 75%, or three-quarters of California voters, support a pathway to legalization for undocumented immigrants. Nationally, even a poll by conservative Fox News found that 83% support a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants who are working, and 86% would support a citizenship pathway for those who were brought to the U.S. as children. California is the first state to adopt sanctuary state status, though several major cities in multiple states have done so. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Capitol Report. President Donald Trump has rolled out a new tax reform plan that would slash corporate tax rates from 35% to 20% and cap at 25% the rate for pass-through entities, from small businesses to large hedge funds. In addition, the plan eliminates inheritance taxes on large estates and changes tax brackets from 7 to just 3, 12%, 25%, and 35%. So the poorest taxpayers now paying 10% would pay more, while the wealthiest, now paying 39.6%, would pay less. Biggest beneficiaries could be multinational corporations, since these U.S. companies would no longer be taxed on their overseas earnings, though there's talk of adding a repatriation tax to encourage companies to bring jobs home. The Trump plan eliminates many tax deductions, including deductions for state taxes paid by taxpayers. However, it also doubles the standard tax deduction to $12,000 for individuals and $24,000 for married couples filing jointly. So it's unclear whether limited tax savings for middle-income earners due to some provisions of the tax plan might be offset by paying even more due to other changes in the plan. The proposal would retain the mortgage deduction and tax credits for low-income housing construction, research and development, and charitable giving, but would eliminate most other itemized deductions and tax credits that many businesses and individual taxpayers now utilize. But slashing taxes comes at a price, with some experts predicting the measure would raise the federal debt by over $2 trillion, at odds with Republicans' campaign promises to reduce the federal debt. Trump calls the plan a revolutionary change and claims the biggest winners will be the everyday American workers as jobs start pouring into our country and companies start competing for American labor and as wages start going up at levels that you haven't seen in many years. But some economic experts cast doubt on that rosy projection, citing contradictory historical evidence on trickle-down economics. Senate Republicans apparently don't want financial scrutiny of their plan. They added a provision in their budget that waives the normally required analysis of the tax bill by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office before the vote. But the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget estimates the plan would result in an estimated $2.2 trillion in net tax cuts, meaning tax cuts not offset by increased revenues, thus deepening the federal deficit, if that projection is accurate. One of the biggest changes, in pass-through rules, is touted as helping small businesses. But in fact, nearly half of all businesses in the U.S., including sole proprietorship and partnerships, now report pass-through income, a big change from the past when only 20% did so. The Los Angeles Times reports that pass-through rules have been a boon to the 1% who funnel much of their income through pass-through entities. Their taxes will be dramatically slashed under the Trump plan, and entities benefiting can include most hedge funds, private equity funds, law, consulting, and accounting firms that are partnerships, including large global enterprises, say Aaron Krupkin and Adam Looney of the Brookings Institution. House Speaker Paul Ryan has previously criticized what he calls crushing federal debt. But when asked about the seeming hypocrisy in campaigning on lowering the national debt, but now backing a tax plan that could hike the debt, GOP leaders claim their tax plan would spur corporations and the wealthy to invest in growing jobs that would ultimately produce enough new income to offset their deep tax cuts. While theoretically possible, the track record on past such efforts has been dubious. In Kansas, the only state that exempted all pass-through income from state taxes 5 years ago, had revenues plunge, creating a budget crisis that led to repeal of the measure earlier this year. Conservatives, however, tout the Reagan era, when the economy grew at 7.3% after slashing top income tax levels from 70% to 28% and increasing tax deductions for businesses, as evidence that trickle-down economics can work. But Reagan also boosted defense spending by more than $125 billion. So it's unclear just how much of the growth was due to increased defense industry jobs instead of cutting taxes. But Reagan's reign also tripled the national debt from $2.8 trillion, USA Today reports. But liberals point out that President Bill Clinton raised taxes significantly and yet had stronger economic growth than Reagan. Jared Bernstein, senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and former chief economist to former Vice President Joe Biden, notes that during Clinton's 8-year term, 22 million jobs were created and the economy grew at an average 3.8% each year, including the technology industry boom. Democrats criticize the Trump tax measure as helping primarily the top 1% of income earners at the expense of others. Oregon Senator Rob Wyden says, if this framework is all about the middle class, then Trump Tower is middle class housing.
Critics have further argued that now is not the time for such cuts at a time when the nation is reeling from major hurricane damage in Florida, Texas, and Puerto Rico, where victims' advocates contend the administration seeks to aid the rich and corporations on the back of hurricane survivors who need federal aid to rebuild or relocate.
Congress has also let the Children's Health Program expire and made cuts in other popular programs, and could potentially be left with even less federal funding for future priorities if the Trump tax plan is approved as drafted.
Some California groups are predicting that President Donald Trump's new executive order on health care could undermine health insurance markets and lead to higher premiums for many people. The order, issued Thursday, directs federal agencies to loosen regulations to allow small businesses to band together and offer low-cost plans across state lines that don't meet the minimum coverage standards of the Affordable Care Act. Rachel Lynn Gish with the California nonprofit group Health Access warns these plans will be similar to those outlawed by the ACA as junk insurance that cover very little in the event of a serious injury or illness.
There were a lot of plans out there that, sure, it would be really cheap, but your deductibles would be extremely high, your copays would be high, prescription drug costs almost 100% out of pocket.
The executive order would also make short-term insurance plans more widely available. The president says it will provide a low-cost alternative. Opponents counter that it will mean fewer young, healthy people get their insurance on the state exchanges. Their participation is necessary to stabilize the risk level for insurers and keep premiums down for the majority of people. Gish says the administration, frustrated by its failure to repeal the ACA, is sabotaging it instead by cutting the enrollment period in half, slashing the budget to promote enrollment, and threatening to withhold cost-sharing payments to the states that help people afford their premiums.
He's doing everything in his power to make sure that Obamacare collapses. The president says that Obamacare is collapsing, but in fact, he is the one doing the collapsing by doing executive orders like this.
On Tuesday, Covered California, the ACA exchange in the Golden State, announced it's adding a 15% surcharge on silver-level health plans to compensate for the anticipated loss of the cost-sharing reduction payments. People affected by the increase, however, are expected to be eligible for extra subsidies to offset the higher premiums. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Valerie Watts with a Crime Beat report. A man accused of violently assaulting two people in Boulevard's Terra del Sol community Sunday night triggered a SWAT team intervention that ended after he set fire to a trailer and was arrested trying to flee the scene. According to San Diego Sheriff Sergeant William Hout, the suspect had struck a female relative in the face with a baseball bat and injured a male relative with a sword. Responding deputies called for help from a sheriff's helicopter and canine team. Deputies found the suspect inside a fifth-wheel trailer on the property, pacing back and forth and rambling incoherently, according to Sergeant Hout. The suspect refused commands by deputies to exit the trailer and then began verbally threatening them, says Hout. A SWAT team was dispatched to the scene with crisis negotiators who tried unsuccessfully to establish contact with the suspect. The man set fire to the trailer and tried to flee on foot, but was arrested by SWAT team deputies. The blaze spread to several other outbuildings before firefighters could extinguish the flames. The trailer was a total loss and other buildings sustained damage. Both assault victims were treated at a hospital and released. The suspect, 34-year-old Brian Ellis, is charged with arson and assault with a deadly weapon. The sheriff's bomb and arson team continues to investigate this case.
The city of El Cajon will rehold public hearings on filing liens against city residents over unpaid bills for trash removal services provided by Waste Management. That decision comes after Councilman Ben Colasso voted in favor of filing the liens after Waste Management paid $2,500 in membership fees to a Chamber of Commerce that he founded and which his wife headed up since his election to the City Council. State law requires elected officials to recuse themselves from voting on matters in which they have a significant financial stake. It is unclear why Colasso did not do so. Waste Management recently revoked its membership in Colasso's chamber due to controversies involving the chamber and the Miss Middle East beauty pageant. The San Diego Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce has been forced to reorganize as the Middle Eastern Chamber of Commerce after the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office ordered Colasso to cease using the original name due to a trademark conflict with a similarly named chamber in Detroit. Colasso's chamber, which he has operated as a sole proprietorship, has also run the beauty pageant. The pageant has been sued for fraud and other claims, and Colasso has countersued, claiming those charges are false. The state attorney general has also launched an inquiry into the pageant's nonprofit status and recently sent a final notice to register, asking Colasso for more documentation and warning that failure to respond by October 19th will lead to referral to the California Franchise Tax Board and may result in the organization losing its tax-exempt status. Approving liens against property holders with unpaid trash bills has been a routine process in El Cajon and other communities. But Colasso's failure to recuse himself from the vote could potentially create a legal quagmire if the city's vote were to be challenged. City Attorney Morgan Foley says that in an abundance of caution, the city will conduct new public hearings and votes for both the February and June 2017 lists of delinquent refuse service fees in which Colasso previously participated, the Union Tribune reports. Councilman Colasso will not be participating in those new hearings or decisions. Foley said the city is holding a revote even though it's uncertain whether the council is required to do so. Residents notified of delinquencies will have a second chance to dispute the charges. Foley told East County Magazine that the city does not yet know how much the new hearings will cost taxpayers. Notices have not yet been sent out, but could occur as early as November. The issue raises the question of whether Colosio might have other conflicts of interest, since he has not disclosed the new or old chamber's membership lists or sponsors, nor sponsors of the pageant. The city attorney says that disclosure is Colosio's responsibility, not the city's. East County Magazine sent questions to Councilman Colosio, which he refused to answer, as has been the case on other recent stories. Here are the questions that we emailed to Councilman Colosio, which he would not answer. Were you advised by the city about state and or city conflict of interest laws before the waste management liens vote? Do you dispute that voting on waste management liens was a conflict of interest, and if so, on what basis? Why didn't you recuse yourself from this vote, given that waste management has indicated their company was at the time a $2,500 sponsor of the chamber that you founded and that your wife served as president of? Will you disclose your chamber members and sponsors, as well as pageant sponsors, in the future to the city in order to provide public transparency and dispel questions about any other potential conflicts of interest, or take any other steps to prevent conflict of interest votes in the future, and if so, what will those steps be? The city has now announced it will hold a revote on this issue. Do you believe it's fair for taxpayers to pay the costs associated with a revote that is occurring because you didn't recuse yourself on the last vote? Now, Councilman Colosio did send back an email to us, which states, "My response is that I no longer do interviews with East County Magazine, and my media interviews are only scheduled with reputable and legitimate media outlets." It's unclear just how Colosio defines reputable and legitimate media outlets. East County Magazine has won over 100 major journalism awards, including many of the top awards presented by Society of Professional Journalists and San Diego Press Club for community reporting, investigative reporting, and public interest journalism. Our site is also widely read, with 6 million hits and almost a quarter of a million visits to our news site every month. Colosio has also refused to answer questions for recent articles published by the San Diego Union-Tribune, a Pulitzer Prize-winning newspaper. Colosio's refusal to answer questions included articles written by Jeff McDonald, Society of Professional Journalists' former Journalist of the Year. Colosio has called McDonald a troll for his repeated efforts to get Colosio to comment. Colosio regularly sought and received coverage of his campaign and early council days in our publication. He also participated in a candidate forum on which both East County Magazine and the Union Tribune provided two of the four co-moderators. The councilman only refused to respond to questions from these media outlets after both publications ran articles on legal and ethical controversies regarding Councilman Ben Colosio, an elected official, and asked legitimate news-gathering questions on matters that are clearly of public interest. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A class-action lawsuit has been filed against Slide Fire Solutions, LP, the manufacturer of the bump stock device used by the mass shooter in Las Vegas to convert a semi-automatic weapon to the functional equivalent of a machine gun, in order to evade a federal ban on fully automatic weapons that's been the law for 80 years. The suit was filed by the law firm Eglett Prince and the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence on behalf of all of the festival goers who suffered emotional distress due to the shooting, which killed 58 victims and injured over 500 more. Many other people were traumatized during one of the deadliest mass public shootings in U.S. history. The suit seeks both actual costs of counseling and emotional distress treatment, as well as punitive damages. It alleges that Slide Fire was negligent in marketing bump stocks to the public without reasonable restrictions, stating, "This horrific assault would and could not have occurred with a conventional handgun, rifle, or shotgun of the sort used by law-abiding responsible gun owners for hunting or self-defense. The bump stock enabled the Vegas shooter to wreak mass carnage in just 11 minutes. Slide Fire, in a 2010 letter to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, claimed bump stocks were meant to help persons whose hands have limited mobility. But Slide Fire's inventor of the bump stock, Jeremiah Cottle, stated in a 2016 interview with Ammoland that the device targeted people like me, who love full auto. Slide Fire has suspended new orders of the device, its website states. The company did not respond to a request for comments. The Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence is named for James Brady, White House secretary to President Ronald Reagan, who suffered a brain injury when he was struck by a bullet during an assassination attempt on the president. The Brady Center has obtained or helped obtain over $80 million in verdicts and settlements against gun companies on behalf of victims over the last 25 years. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Carfentanil, an elephant tranquilizer drug that is 5,000 times stronger than heroin, is turning up in street drugs marketed as opioid narcotic painkillers such as oxycodone, as well as disguised as heroin with lethal results. The drug is so deadly that just a couple of granules the size of salt crystals will cause death, even with medical intervention. It's turning up in street drugs locally and nationally, including drugs sold by dealers and on the Internet's dark web, and deaths are skyrocketing as a result. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that agents in San Diego and Imperial counties have seized over 20,000 counterfeit oxycodone pills. Besides carfentanil, counterfeit drugs locally have also been found laced with fentanyl, methamphetamine, cocaine, and other drugs and chemicals. One San Diego drug trafficker was found with a small baggie containing enough carfentanil to kill 86,000 people, a postal inspector told the Union Tribune. The Centers for Disease Control and the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency have each recently issued warnings about the trend, which DEA Acting Administrator Chuck Rosenberg calls crazy dangerous. Drug overdose is now the leading cause of death for Americans under age 50, causing between 58,000 and 65,000 deaths last year, CBS Live reports. According to the CDC, the death rate from synthetic opioids other than methadone rose more than 72% between 2014 and 2015, and most of those deaths were not from prescription drugs, but rather illegally manufactured fentanyl. Fentanyl is 50 times more potent than heroin and 100 times more potent than morphine. It's what killed the rock star Prince. Now, carfentanil, 100 times stronger even than fentanyl, is being used by illegal drug makers because it's far cheaper than heroin or other opioids, boosting their profits, but at a deadly cost. Carfentanil gas was used by Russian special forces to subdue Chechen rebels holding hostages in a Moscow theater a few years ago, killing 120 hostages from the poison gas as well as subduing rebels. Carfentanil has been banned as a battlefield weapon because it is so lethal it would kill anyone who touched it without special handling and leave behind a toxic landscape, CBS Live 5 news station has reported. Some authorities fear the consequences if terrorists ever utilize carfentanil as a weapon of mass destruction. Most carfentanil is made in China, where new regulations will kick in the near future that authorities hope may stem the tide. But raw materials for making fentanyl and carfentanil have also been shipped to Mexico, where they are converted into the deadly drugs in makeshift labs and then smuggled into the United States. In San Diego County, while some shipments have been confiscated at the border, others have made it into drugs sold on streets. San Diego County's medical examiner has confirmed 40 deaths this year alone from fentanyl and 11 more awaiting confirmation, plus 2 deaths from carfentanil. The trend toward phony but lethal opioid pills and heroin laced with stronger substances is particularly dangerous, given that medical providers have been urged to cut down on prescribing opioids, driving some patients onto the black market, and in a growing number of cases, into the morgue. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes pumpkin patch events at Summers Past Farms and Scotty Scare Trail in Flynn Springs, train rides on the Pumpkin Express in Campo, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, a chili cook-off for charity in Lemon Grove, and Kids Care Fest in Lakeside.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including El Cajon's Haunt Fest on Main, Borrego Days, a toast to East County, a haunted lodge, a Halloween Harvest Family Festival on Mount Helix, the Boulevard Boo Parade, a spooky camp over at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, Laurel and Hardy's Night Hallow Scream in Spring Valley, a harvest fest and plant sale at the Water Conservation Garden, the Ramona Art and Wine Festival, and live hawk demonstrations at Mission Trails Regional Park.
So stay tuned for all these events and many more.
The Pumpkin Patch at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs invites you to Pumpkin Patch weekends, complete with corn maze, jumpy for kids, popcorn, and more. There are also special dates for petting and meeting a variety of animals, from alpacas to pigs, as well as a dog show, costume contest, and more. There will be a different themed event each weekend in October. For a full schedule of activities, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
Scotty's Scare Trail, located at the Marshall Scotty's Abandoned Amusement Park in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon, is rumored to be haunted by old employees and children who never left, plus monsters roaming the premises. Open Fridays and Saturdays in October from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., the Scare Trail aims to create haunting memories for you, whether or not you've ever visited this once-enchanting destination as a child. For more chilling details, you can visit scaretrail.com.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association is hosting its 12th annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration. You're invited to ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County mountains as fall descends upon the Campo community. Trains depart from the Campo Depot three times daily, each Saturday and Sunday in October. The Pumpkin Express will wind down the hill through some of the most scenic parts of the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway. Keep your eyes open for the Grim Reaper, who may be stowed away on board. After the train returns to the museum grounds, children and their parents will enjoy decorating pumpkins from an indoor pumpkin patch. You can also walk through one of the two haunted trains with a creepy cast of goblins and ghouls, and take home a pumpkin for each train rider. For reservations, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org.
Step back in time to a fur trading and colonial camp from the 1700s to 1840s at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous. This event takes place October 13 through 22 at the Mattagui Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. You can see demonstrations of survival skills such as cooking, archery, tomahawk throwing, black powder shooting, and tool making. For more information, you can visit the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous page on Facebook.
Get your appetites ready. Lemon Grove Soroptimists are fired up to host their 13th annual Hometown Chili Cook-Off on October 14th at the VFW Hall from 6 to 8:30 p.m. A dozen community groups will vie for the coveted Fiery Chili Chef Trophy, and the also-ran plaques for Chili Chef Ablaze and Chili Chef Smokin'. As you cast your ballots for your favorite chili entry, remember, it's all for a good cause, with proceeds benefiting Soroptimists' charitable endeavors, including scholarships and a holiday food and toy drive.
Grossmont Healthcare District presents Kids Care Fest on Saturday, October 14th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. This event will offer potentially life-saving healthcare screenings as well as dental and vision screenings at no cost, as well as safety demonstrations, flu shots, health information, plus fun activities such as pony rides and a rock climbing wall. For details, visit kidscarefest.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The 6th annual Haunt Fest on Main will be held October 20th from 5 to 10 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. This event also features costume contests on the Main Street stage, carnival rides, crafts, games, car show, a candy trail, kids' zone with outdoor movies, face painting, inflatables for kids, pumpkin patch, Ghostbusters, and more. This event is presented by the City of El Cajon and the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners. For more haunting details, you can visit hauntfest.org.
The 52nd annual Borrego Days Desert Festival kicks off Saturday, October 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and continues through Sunday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Borrego Days Parade steps off at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 21st along Palm Canyon Drive and Christmas Circle in Borrego Springs, complete with pre-parade flyover, floats, marching bands, and trick-riding Western cowboys. Borrego Days also includes arts and crafts and a carnival fun zone for kids both days, plus live music for dancing under the stars on Saturday night. For more information, you can visit borregodays.com.
The San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce will present this year's A Toast to East County on Sunday, October 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. at the El Cajon Elks Lodge. You can enjoy wine tasting, craft beer samples, restaurant tastings, honey and cheese, olive oil and more, plus live music, giveaways, and Trailblazer Awards. You can find out more delicious details at eastcountychamber.org.
The El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 is teaming up with the local haunted house production company Scare Ventures to present a haunted lodge for the community in their parking lot from October 26th through the 31st. This will be one of the only haunted houses in San Diego's East County. The Haunted Lodge will feature a maze and four different key scare areas for guests to experience, plus activities and booths. There will also be early evening hours set aside for children under 12 to experience a less scary version of the haunted house that is family-friendly for youngsters, where they will be treated to Halloween candy from nicer monsters they encounter as part of their tour through the lodge maze. The Elks will donate 100% of the proceeds from the event for children's charities. You can purchase advance tickets at ElCajonElks.com.
The Mount Helix Park Foundation and Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association are joining together for a fun-filled Halloween Harvest Family Festival at the top of Mount Helix Park for neighborhood families on Sunday, October 29th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. A costume parade for kids, live music by Lenny and the Lounge Lizards, plus booths from local businesses offering crafts, games, and treats will all be part of this fall festival. Park at the San Miguel Fire Station on Vivera to take a free shuttle to the top of Mount Helix. For more information on the event, visit mounthelixpark.org.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine will host its annual Spooky Campover from 3 p.m. Friday, October 27th until noon on October 28th. Bring your own pumpkin to carve, food, camping gear, and best costume. This event promises a wild and ghoulish night under the stars with the rescued animals. There will be pumpkin carving, s'mores, campfire songs, a costume contest, and animal feedings. For reservations, visit lionstigersandbears.org. All proceeds benefit the nonprofit facility's work to rescue exotic animals and provide a permanent home for them.
Celebrating its 13th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held on Saturday, October 28th, starting at 10 a.m. With over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard in the college area, the parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit. Grandstand seating is available for purchase or arrive early to stake out space along the parade route. The best viewing is along the south side of El Cajon Boulevard between Rolando Boulevard and 60th Street.
The Saps at Sea, the official Laurel and Hardy fan club in San Diego, will host its October event, Howlarious Hallow Scream, on October 28th at 7 p.m. This month, the Saps are teaming up with the Theater Organ Society of San Diego to bring you Spooky Silence and a Felix the Cat cartoon. You can also see a special screening of the classic silent horror film, The Cat and the Canary.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will hold its Autumn Fest and Plant Sale on November 4th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The campus is located in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. This event features live entertainment, kids' activities, gardening workshops, Ask the Designer landscape consultations, advice from water agencies, and a beer garden. For more information, visit thegarden.org.
The 5th annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held at Begin Ranch in Ramona, Saturday, November 4th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Guests can view and purchase appetizers, lunch entrees, and desserts while picnicking in style beneath the shade of a giant oak tree. Vendors will also be on hand offering art and wine-themed items. A highlight of the event will be a live auction of 6 wine barrels painted by local artists. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net.
You're invited to join falconer Bob Gordon with his hawk, Huxley, for a live hawk demonstration and birds of prey talk. Find them at Mission Trails Regional Park, inside the Visitor Center, the first Sunday of each month from 9 a.m. to noon. The next demonstration is scheduled for November 5th. For details, visit mtrp.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Valerie Watts with East County Magazine's People Power Report. The Grossmont Healthcare District has approved a $50,000 grant to support the Challenge Center, a nonprofit facility in La Mesa where people with disabilities receive long-term physical therapy rehabilitation and fitness services, regardless of their ability to pay. The grant aims to fund services for up to 170 people and pay for purchase and maintenance of specialized equipment. According to Tiffany Picayu, Challenge Center's executive director, a recent study showed Challenge Center's clients experience a lower rate of hospital readmissions and functional decline, factors which typically can result in higher Medicare costs associated with loss of independence. Picayu thanked Grossmont Healthcare District for its support through the years, adding, "Every dollar invested in the Challenge Center produces bottom-line results in terms of higher-functioning, healthier clients and caregivers, plus healthcare cost savings." She says that without continued therapy, improvement in such severely disabled individuals is unlikely, and depression, declining health, and related secondary conditions are likely to return. Fortunately, many of the Challenge Center's clients are able to attain independence and a higher quality of life. Picayu says, "Our vision is to restore health, provide hope, and transform lives." The Challenge Center was founded in 1987 by the late Bill Baudry, a quadriplegic who suffered a spinal cord injury as a young man. Baudry died in June of this year at age 72. Originally in El Cajon, the center later moved to La Mesa, where it has been supported by funds from the City of La Mesa, private donations, and Grossmont Healthcare District, a public agency serving East County. Its therapeutic physical therapy programs help over 500 clients with mobility disorders, ranging from severe brain and spinal cord injury to multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease. Services include assisted fitness training, aerobics, group exercise, and adaptive yoga. One of the fitness machines includes a stationary bicycle with computer-generated electrical stimulation that causes paralyzed lower extremities to pedal, achieving cardiovascular fitness and muscle strengthening. Services are provided on a sliding scale, enabling underinsured individuals to receive the care they need.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The number of Latinos in college in California is surging, but their graduation rates are still far behind other groups, according to a new report. Researchers from Georgetown University found that 12% of Latinos have a bachelor's degree or higher, compared to 43% of whites and 24% of African Americans. Audrey Dow with the Campaign for College Opportunity says Latinos are now fully represented at Nevada community colleges, but not at four-year schools.
Once our students get to college, they are finding it very difficult to complete. And a lot of that difficulty is because of institutional barriers that students will face.
Dow says, for example, that flaws in many college assessment tests mean students are placed in remedial classes when they're qualified to do college-level work, which puts them behind. She also points out that four-year schools have such varied graduation requirements that transfer students have a hard time navigating the system and often drop out or require up to 6 years to finish. Anthony Carnevale, a report co-author and director of the Georgetown University Center for Education and the Workforce, says Latinos who make it through college still aren't reaping all the benefits.
They're not getting the same earnings for the same degrees as whites do. That is, irrespective of what major Latinos enroll in, what college they enroll in, whether they graduate or not, in the end, they always make less than whites.
The report also found that more than a third of Latinos in California have less than a high school education, and 62% have a high school degree or less, compared to 21% of whites and 32% of African Americans. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Sometimes retrieving has its pitfalls. A 3-year-old golden retriever chasing after a ball got its head stuck underneath a brick wall. Fortunately, lakeside firefighters came to the rescue. The crew from Engine 2 freed the trapped dog, which seemed no worse for the wear. Lakeside Fire posted a photo of the rescued retriever on its Twitter feed and reported, "Upon release, he resumed chasing the ball." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
You're gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they leave Paris.
Agriculture values in San Diego County returned to their growing ways in the latest annual county crop report, increasing by 2.63% to nearly $1.75 billion last year. That's a big shift after 2 years of decline during the drought. The county's biggest cash crop, however, has not changed over the past decade. It's still ornamental trees and shrubs, such as crepe myrtles and bottle brushes, indoor plants like bromeliads and dracaenas, and garden flowers like marigolds and snapdragons. Avocados, the county's best-known crop, rose in value, even though the number of acres planted was the lowest in 5 years, meaning consumers are paying more. Oranges appeared on the top 10 crops for the first time since 2008, while lemon and lime values declined. Eggs and tomato values also continued to decline. But cacti and succulents continued a 2-year jump in production value, nearly doubling from roughly $43 million in 2014 to nearly $83 million in the new report, as conservation-minded consumers seek out drought-tolerant landscaping options. The crop report, which can be seen online at the County News Center, is a yearly snapshot of an industry that has been an important staple of San Diego County's total economy, but one that has faced challenges, including not only the state's historic 6-year drought that ended in January, but also the rising cost of water, wildfires, freezes, agricultural pests, and diseases. Despite those challenges, total agriculture production values have grown in 6 of the last 10 years, up overall from $1.5 billion a decade ago to over $1.7 billion last year. The San Diego region now exports crops to 42 countries around the world. In fact, in addition to the 2016 crop report, the county's Department of Agriculture Weights and Measures released a new multiplier formula showing that the total value of the county's economy in 2016 was nearly $3 billion. The multiplier included direct and indirect benefits of agricultural production, including jobs the industry has created and money its businesses and employees spend in the broader economy. The County Board of Supervisors has taken several actions in recent years to boost agriculture, including creating a boutique winery ordinance, approving a new beekeeping ordinance that allows more beekeeping, adopting an agricultural easement program that preserves agricultural space, streamlining regulations for things like cheesemaking, agritourism, and on-site horticultural sales. One crop you won't see listed on the county's top 10 list, however, is marijuana, or its biological cousin, hemp. Despite California voters legalizing both recreational and medicinal use of cannabis, each county can set its own rules, and San Diego County's supervisors have voted to outlaw commercial growing of all hemp and marijuana crops. So, while some other counties are cashing in on the newest green growing trend, you won't see San Diego voters reaping the financial benefits of pot farming anytime soon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
The U.S. Forest Service, in a series of messages sent on its Twitter account, warns that the growing cost of wildfires is taking money from other programs, including those that reduce fire threats. This year, the Federal Forest Service expects to transfer $500 to $600 million from other accounts to fund firefighting. That means less money to support hazardous fuel reduction, reforestation, recreation, watershed, timber, and wildlife conservation, says Vicki Christensen, Forest Service's deputy chief. She blames this shift not only on growing wildfires, but also on the erosion of the agency's non-fire budget. In 1995, wildfires accounted for 16% of the agency's budget. This year, fighting fires has taken 56%, more than half, of all U.S. Forest Service resources. As conditions worsen across the West, wildfires are projected to consume two-thirds of the agency's overall budget by 2021, 4 years from now. The agency warns, "Our mission is to sustain America's forests and grasslands, but it's consumed by the growing cost of wildfires." That challenge comes amid budget slashing to federal agencies by the Trump administration and increasingly hot, dry temperatures fueled by climate change, scientists report. And yet President Trump refuses to acknowledge the existence of climate change, let alone take steps to slow climate change or expend funds to address the impacts, such as more frequent and severe firestorms. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Valerie Watts with an education report. Grossmont Union High School District seeks applicants to fill two vacancies on its Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. The committee oversees implementation of school bond measures Proposition U and Measure BB. The appointee will serve a two-year term beginning January 2018 as a community member at large and will be eligible to serve for up to two additional two-year terms. Members must be at least 18 years old, cannot be an employee of the district or a contractor, vendor, or consultant to the district. They must be able to attend meetings held the last Wednesday evening in January, March, June, and September, as well as serve on a subcommittee that meets quarterly. Applications and details must be received by November 1st and can be obtained on the district's website.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.